Well, hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Pulse, where we talk to digital health influencers, enthusiasts, experts, and entrepreneurs from all over the world. I am super excited to be talking to our guest today. But just before that, a quick reminder to like our LinkedIn page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, and we're also on 6 different podcast channels, including Spotify and Google Podcasts. I'm your host, Dr. Maida Fun, and today we have with us Dr. Behrouz Behbood. He is the host and producer of Tribe Talks, a trusted resource for health professionals turned coaches, consultants, and startup founders. And he helps them turn their health expertise and lived experience into a thriving online business. Welcome to the podcast.
Oh, thank you so much for the invitation, Maida.
So I'm intrigued by what you're doing. I see a lot of clinicians, a lot of healthcare professionals starting their own businesses and venturing into entrepreneurship. But before we sort of dive into that, I try to get to know my guests a little bit more. So just sort of walk me through your background a little bit.
Yeah, I'll keep it brief, but feel free to ask away if you want to know more. In a nutshell, I'm a public health physician trained in the UK, in the Mediterranean region, in Cyprus specifically, but also in the States. And through that route, I've been interested, obviously, in prevention mainly. And as you know, there's various types of prevention, but without going into the detail, it's an intersectoral, interdisciplinary approach and a life course perspective. And fast forward to about 2011, roughly, I started becoming interested in exercising or practicing public health, which I still do the traditional way, but there's other ways beyond academia and national or regional public health agencies. And I found a niche called entrepreneurship, innovation entrepreneurship. Yeah. And so I was a bit reluctant because I don't want to, it was, initially it feels like selling your soul, right? It's like, I won't get into the concerns, but most of us as clinicians are concerned that if we go to the dark side, it sounds like the dark side, right? Going to work for industry. But actually, that's where things happen at pace usually. And it's also where we can then bring things into the health system. So I realized there's various ways of doing that. And to cut a long story short, initially, it was about 2000, I can't remember, maybe 5-6 years ago, I started more formally helping people who are in the entrepreneurship space wanting to get into the health sector, giving them a taste of how to strategize, like what you perhaps are doing, how to navigate the system and how to optimize their value proposition or what they want to do to help, basically. And then fast forward to my burnout, I think you've heard this. So this was in peak of the pandemic a couple of years ago.
This is my next question, actually. I went through, I heard one of your videos and you were talking about your burnout and how you know, it was peak pandemic and you reached that. Tell me what you, because we talk about burnout, we read about burnout. What did you feel? What does burnout feel like?
Oh gosh, I would never want anyone to feel it. That's all I can say. The first initial thing is just you just feel like everything that you're passionate about into getting into what you do, you've spent all these decades and years traveling the world, leaving your family and friends behind to train to become a clinician, and then you hate every aspect of your job. You come home, you're angry, you're depressed, you're sad, you're angry with your family and your friends and yourself. And then you feel failure. You feel like, what has happened? And then you feel very lonely. I really wouldn't want anyone to go through it. But throughout this cycle, it's like grief in a way. You start, if you have the support, which is important, by the way, do seek out support if you're suffering from this. You get to a process where you start realizing what is actually important for you, your values, and what drives you. I'll pause there if you want to.
No, sure. And that was so real and that was raw. And that was, it's just something I think that we read about, we read the symptoms and what it feels like, but to hear it from someone who's actually experienced it, it just hits different. And so, you know, just carrying on and extending on that, you yourself moved into the entrepreneurship sort of route, you took that route. And clinicians are often put into a box and they're not considered good business people. They're not very business savvy. And you've clearly debunked this myth. So tell me a little bit about your entrepreneurship journey.
So I don't know if I've debunked it. It's a learning curve, and I love it. It's anything that I'm learning new is fantastic. I think, you know, initially, as I said, it was really helping, and it still is, you know, helping founders who are from a non-health background to understand how to navigate the system. And like you, I think you have a public health perspective on things. It really helps to take the systems perspective, the international perspective, rather than just pure clinical, because only 10% of our health is determined that by that clinical interaction. So that's what I began with, like as a consultant, as a strategic chief medical officer to startups, for example. But then fast forward to about 6 months ago, I was reviewing one of my old podcasts with a coach that coached me live on the podcast. And back then he was saying, why don't you help fellow health professionals who went through what exactly you went through? And I didn't hear it back then. And I listened to it again. And so I thought, yeah, I've been learning a lot. I'm still learning. Why don't I share it with clinicians? So right now I help fellow health professionals, whether they're doctors, nurses, pharmacists, whoever, to really get into the business world. Most of them, as you know, want to get into digital health and tech and all that kind of stuff. But it's not the right medicine for all of us. So that's who I try to coach.
Well, that's amazing. And I'm glad that you pointed out that it's not a one-size-fits-all solution, because not everyone is venturing into health tech. They have their own sort of ideas, their clinics, their, you know, their own platforms. And I think as clinicians, like you said, it sort of feels like we're betraying the clinical, the mainstream medicine or our patients. And it almost feels like we're being disloyal to our field. And as someone who has taken that unconventional route, I hear it all the time. Like, why did you do medicine if you wanted to do something else? So, you know, keeping that view in mind, clinicians aren't trained for business. You know, they don't have business, like formal business training as part of their medical curriculum or as part of their academia. How important do you think that is? I think at a stage where I am, I wish I had some formal business training. I'm sure you feel like that too. What do you think about incorporating business training as part of academic training?
Yeah, as part of like medical training, is that what you're... And I'm guessing, because we've got to differentiate between the terms business, innovation, and entrepreneurship, or even intrapreneurship. We've got to differentiate between those. And I'll elaborate in a moment. Mm-hmm. But also it's about, you know, when in your training, because it's a long term, like sometimes it's 10, 20 years. And so I would say, number one, if you are thinking about either you or the health system in general who is organizing and developing the curriculum, if it's important for every single clinician, doctor, nurse, whoever, to become a manager or a leader of a setting, then business training is crucial in terms of management, administration, like what you learn in an MBA program. But I don't think that is required for everyone, because not everyone gets into private practice, not everyone leads a hospital section or a department, for example. So that's, for me, postgraduate training when you need it. The number one priority for all clinicians is the prevention and treatment of our patients. That's it, and absolutely, population. However, what I would be keen on teaching every single clinician is, and I would even start even before in children, would be entrepreneurial thinking. That's very different.
Wow.
So how to identify, how to assess problems, how to find solutions, but also find a team and bring them together to solve that problem. You could be an entrepreneur to do that too.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And so you're saying that it's the mindset, actually, to sort of start young and start thinking that way. When did you in your journey start thinking about it? And what were some of the challenges that you...
I've never seen myself as an entrepreneur, but I was looking back. I've been looking back at a lot of things recently. One was a yearbook for when we finished high school. It was 1997 or whatever. And one of my friends wrote about me saying he's an entrepreneur, and I never saw myself as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
I really didn't think about it. And I would say it all started actually when I was maybe 5 years old and I started seeing the world. And out of necessity, you know, family had to relocate because of conflict, and to go into a new environment, you have to be entrepreneurial and find new jobs, new ways of generating an income for your family.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I never, it was all sub, you know, it was just subliminal, kind of not even realizing that I'm getting that training growing up in the family, right? And then I would say the entrepreneurship bug got me when I started seeing a couple of stories. May I share one of them with you, Maida?
Please, yes.
I think one of them that stood out was I was sitting, I literally just posted on LinkedIn today about it. I was a teaching assistant in a class at Harvard where we were teaching architect students and also public health students about environmental health, specifically in buildings, indoors. And one of the students who was also doing the doctorate there was very rarely in class. And I started asking, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I didn't know. And then fast forward several years later, I think I was somewhere in the US or the UK and I saw her on Shark Tank pitching to Mark Cuban and everyone else.
Wow.
And she did well. Yeah. Her PhD became a startup. And so I realized, okay, there's more ways to practice population health than pure academia.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I think that is amazing. The reason I asked that is because you should be receptive to the noise around you. If people are telling you something, if people are pointing out certain characteristics in you, and maybe you just don't realize it yourself, but at some point in life, I think when you look back, like you just did, and you had that sort of thing very early on, and you're manifesting it now and helping thousands of people, and it's just great. And something that you talk about is also, or emphasize on, is scalability. And it's about building a scalable business. And why I chose this point in particular is because people, it's very easy to start a startup, but it's harder to scale it. Well, first of all, is there a particular time frame in which scalability is possible? Do you start sooner? Do you start later? And what are some deterrents? And what are just some tips that you would give around this area?
Yeah, absolutely, Maida. I think number one, let's be clear what scalability is. And I think I'm sure you know, but just to be clear with the audience and set it in place, I say this because scalability has to be by design when you're creating your startup. Not every idea is a good health idea that solves a problem, and not every health idea is a good business idea, and not every business idea is a scalable idea. So scalability is all about, you know,
should
how
I write
can
this
you...
down? I think I should make it. Take notes. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I appreciate it. So I think the main concept to learn is really, you know, you can increase your profits and your revenue without incurring more expenses, variable costs, we call them. And traditionally, digital health works really well because you've got one product that you sell and then you can repeat it. So the key characteristic of the product has to be that it's not something that you need to tweak with every single customer. That's a challenge. You know, most AI startups, artificial intelligence, what they think they can do is create a scalable product, but they need to tweak the data that goes in with every different setting or country or population that they work with. So it's not as scalable as they think it is, unless they plan it by design. But I would say two or three tips. So scale early as possible by design. Number two would be obviously the traditional ways of scaling is number one, apart from the product, it's about reaching more people with the existing product or solution, whatever that may be. The second one, once you've saturated that, is to go to new markets with your same solution, if that makes sense. And the third one, but there's a fourth, I'll come on to that. The third one would be to start branching out into new solutions. And just to, the fourth one is related to here, most startups ignore this. You know, I always advise startups and anyone really, any founder, any entrepreneur, just like a PhD student, really focus in on one niche topic.
Yeah.
But no business is built on one product, right? And so if you want to, by design, have, and especially as a CEO, you've got to have that vision for growth. And I would say briefly in one line, don't leave money on the table. And by that, I mean solving the problem of your client. So you've really got to maximize the total spectrum of support that you can offer your ideal client. And it's not just one product. And that's how you can scale, by increasing revenue per client once you've acquired them.
Excellent. What do you think about funding? What are your thoughts on funding?
Do you want the honest truth or the
honest truth? Honest, yep.
So actually, I have a free video called I call it the 3S fundraising framework. And most people, it's like a clock. And most, it's free, by the way. So check out the website and I'll gladly share the link if you want. But essentially, most people just think about friends and family first, or even their own funds. But there's so much more before that that you could be thinking about. And I won't share too much there. I would say funding is a necessity. The question is, where do you get it from and what do you have to give up to get that funding?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, the message I'd love to share with your audience is, and I'm speaking now as a public health doctor, as well as a patient, as well as a carer, most startups are too concerned about attracting funding and pleasing investors. It's wrong. It's so wrong. Generate some traction with who you care about first, because investors mm-hmm. need that, especially, you know, later investors. So get some income from your existing client base that you want to serve and focus on them, then worry about, you know, the investors. Focus on who you want to help. That's what I would say.
And that is just a segue into my next question, because I was going through your free training videos, and I'll definitely share the link with my audience as well. I found your 60-second signature pitch really interesting, but it's easier said than done.
Yeah.
How do you consolidate your USP, or your, you know, why you're different, why they should listen to you in 60 seconds?
So let me put it this way. What are you trying to, so this is a question just to the audience, really. It's like, when, and I, by the way, I hear this time and again, I listen to pitches quite repetitively, actually. And it's so fast how you can lose interest. We're all busy and we've heard it time and again, the same pitches. Yeah. Often, have you noticed that one word responses have a tremendous impact? Like, you know, we know about bad language, you know, it mm-hmm. really has an impact on you. Mm-hmm. Secondly, stories have an impact too. So I think the biggest mistakes that I would say, and then I'll give some tips. The biggest mistakes that I see is the person who is delivering their message, whether it's a pitch in front of investors or to academic or clinical partners, or as a B2C, like direct to your customer, is not understanding your customer's needs and also where they're at in their mind space. What are their fears? What are their concerns? What are their aspirations? Because we tend to develop our product in stealth mode, which I hate, hide it away until it's too late. We try to sell it, no one buys it. And then we come pitching with the wrong lingo. You know, it's, we're speaking different languages. So I would say, make sure you understand your client, where they're at, what are their other problems, so that you can acknowledge those before trying to sell them something. But in 60 seconds, you can say so much. And in all honesty, brevity is more powerful. So watch, it's free training, so do watch that. But I think it obviously it differs by the kind of audience that you want to speak to. But I would say the number, like the three top things that I would highlight is 100%, what is the problem you're solving? You know, and why does it matter to them, the audience? Speak directly to them. What have you got? You know, how did you discover? What was the story behind you actually finding that solution? And then why you and why now? That's it. You can say that in 60 seconds, because at the end of the day, it's just a pitch, just to grab attention. And then at the bottom, you say more information. If you're interested, go here.
Awesome. And so for someone who is not comfortable with putting themselves out there, who are not extroverts, I am an introvert myself. I've battled with my own demons and I've really sort of, come to terms with it, I guess. But introverts do also venture out into entrepreneurship. And with social media, with all these communication channels, what advice would you give to introverts? Yeah.
So whether you believe it or not, I am a natural introvert. I really don't like putting myself out there. But you, there's a mindset, it's all mindset, it's a mindset shift. And I'll share kind of, if I may, just two responses to this that are related.
Sure.
I think the number one question you've got to ask yourself is, which one of these three kinds of people are you? Number one, are you more of a person that likes to create new things? And typically innovators are introverts somehow. They like to get away and solve problems behind the scenes.
Right.
So that's number one. Secondly, are you the kind of person that's more of a risk taker that actually thrives on the ups and downs of taking that innovation as an entrepreneur now and actually building a business, scaling it up, being willing to risk and lose? all win, and hopefully some of those win, and you repeat that process. You don't stay in the same business forever. That's what they entrepreneurs thrive on. Most people get these two things wrong, and actually they're more creative innovators thinking they're entrepreneurs. And the third one is maybe you're not either of those two. You like someone who's got the ideas, you like someone who's the entrepreneur, and you just like to be the advisor coming in and improving processes and making them more efficient. Mm-hmm. So that's number one question you've got to ask yourself. Now, the parallel answer that I want to share with you is the mindset shift that helped me. And I share it in one of my podcast videos about sales. I hate selling. In fact, I detest selling. But sales is not about just throwing something at someone and making an income. Look, you've got to ask yourself, what was the reason that got you into business? If it is because you found or maybe even lived through an experience of your own, you found a solution that truly helps. It's not a gimmick, and that's key. If it truly helps, think of yourself as a clinician. If you've got a therapy, a surgical operation that works, you're going to do everything you can to convince your patient to go through it.
Yeah.
So if you're going to be shy about it, or you're going to hide your product behind the scenes, then you're doing a disservice to your patient or your client. So that's the mindset shift. So you've really, someone, if it's not you, someone has to get this out there. And I think the last tip, which I didn't say, is it's this concept of who, not how. You may have heard this before. It doesn't have to be you doing the speaking. You can recruit someone in the team to do that.
That is just, I think it's such invaluable advice. And for everyone listening, I think sometimes it's just fear that prevents them from going to taking the next step. And so just before, I know you're busy, I'm just going to wrap it up. And before we wrap up, Tribe Talks. tell me about that. I find it very intriguing. I got a couple of DMs on LinkedIn, but I see that you're on Tribe Talks and I'd like to connect. And so I've made a couple of connections through Tribe Talks.
Oh, nice.
So, you know, sort of accumulating a tribe, finding your tribe, both in professional and personal walks of life is very important. What gave you the idea and why are you so passionate about it?
So I love speaking with people. I love learning. So the secret, and it's not so such a secret, I do share this every so often. When I got into the entrepreneurship space, I was new to this sector, right? I'm in a health profession, but in terms of entrepreneurship, and I want to learn from everyone. So when I first designed the podcast, I did it as an excuse to learn. And so I definitely reached out to people who could teach me something. Like one was how to do a podcast, one was something else. And I'm sharing that journey. I think that's what hopefully you'll do too, is sharing what you're learning with those you care about. But that's evolved. So I've tried a few different things, and briefly, not only have I used it in a selfish way to learn, but also share the learning with the audience. For a short period of time, I brought in an audience to have a live kind of interaction. What I've done now is take that behind the scenes so that, you know, this is a top tip for anyone, just so you know, when you give too much away for free, the value drops. People don't value it as much. So I've put that behind a paywall. So the tribe still exists and people can join that. But there's still a lot to share. And it's now evolving at this time of recording where I've had to think about what do people want. I've spoken to people. And because I'm focusing on fellow health professionals who want to create this side business and work less, but also scale and impact more, most of us want to stay up to date, but not just reading the news or reading a pitch or reading some marketing, but actually get an analysis, an expert's analysis on what is the latest in terms of a health need, in terms of population health, digital health, lifestyle medicine, but with the focus on prevention. Mm-hmm. So what I'm turning it into briefly is more of a continuing education kind of podcast where I share it with everyone. It's free. And it will basically be that kind of analysis of what's the latest in innovation.
Thank you so much for everything that you do. I think you're just helping so many people like myself. And
I appreciate
you. You know, I appreciate you taking up time. I thoroughly enjoyed our conversation. I hope we can do this again.
Anytime. You're more than welcome. Right. Thank you.
Thank you. For everyone listening, take care of yourselves. Until next time. Bye-bye.